hoping a magic potion could save my heart. Who knew that these feelings had a name? I'm worthy of change, same as you are. Mirror, mirror, don't you judge me, don't you dare. Who knew I was capable of loving? Who was there staring back? I said staring back at me. Ooh, it's been a long time coming. I love my shell, I love my scars, enough for the both of us. I love myself, no I don't need help. I needed
Hello, folks, and welcome to the Transitional Wisdom Podcast, where Nash and I discuss all things trans and queer related from a variety of different perspectives. Today we are going to be discussing...
Okay, so today we're going to hear about C's experience with your hysterectomy, part two. So we did a part one with the prep and your consult and your emotional thoughts and feelings,
and
mindset, and we didn't really get to hear what actually transpired after that. So we're gonna get to hear all of that today.
Yeah. So in the part one, I think we left it off with I thought I was going to be having my procedure at OSF because they confirmed my pre-op. I was gonna have my pre-op. So I think I assumed that since I was gonna have my pre-op, I was gonna have it there as well. Okay. And then they denied my appeal
to use
their facilities.
Why?
Is
it because you're trans?
They didn't say that particularly. They denied it on the basis that it was a sterilization process in their Catholic institute, and they don't.
But don't they do hysterectomies for...
For anybody else.
For cis women?
Yeah. Yeah, but and I don't know if it was because of my age specifically.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know.
Did you have to get a letter from your doctor or...
No, I didn't have to get any letter for a histo.
Okay.
No?
So maybe, I don't know. Okay,
yeah.
So sterilization.
Yeah, that's what the basis was. But they still would do all my pre-op stuff.
All the testing.
Yeah, so like still all of my blood work, my EKG, and I think that was it that I had done there. Like my ultrasound was done at my doctor's office.
Okay, so the insurance wasn't denying you.
No, my insurance.
The hospital.
Yes.
Okay.
And luckily, I was very lucky that my insurance was accepted at both hospitals. Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of people's insurance would possibly be accepted at OSF, but
mm-hmm.
not at Methodist.
Okay.
You know, I was in a big enough area where I had two or three different hospitals to choose from.
Mm.
So, luckily, my surgeon called and let me know that they denied my surgery there, but she had already called Methodist, and they accepted it for the same day. I think it was earlier.
Wow.
Yeah, it was earlier in the day than would have been at OSF. Okay. It was the first surgery of the day. And my insurance was also accepted there.
Okay.
So it wasn't a big deal, but there was still like that emotional process of being like, I don't understand why you'd
mm-hmm.
reject the surgery.
Right. So like, yeah, it wasn't a big deal in the sense that you obviously
mm-hmm.
got it figured out really quickly and this worked out better for you.
Exactly.
But it's still, sometimes I think that people think just if there's like a quick solution, you're able to fix it. That takes away from like emotionally how devastating or painful it can feel. Because like the bottom line is whether like, you know, we joke or not, like they denied you for being trans. Like,
yeah, exactly. They can say whatever the reasoning was, but it was a denial for
being
trans.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's
and
still a lot to process of just being like rejected. It's just rejection.
I imagine that doesn't feel good.
And it just also goes back to like thinking it's a medical facility.
Mm-hmm.
So shouldn't they be providing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand why politics and religion gets to be involved
why are they
in medical decisions.
Yeah, their feelings have nothing to do with this.
And then also, I mean, just the cynical part of me also looks at it like, shouldn't they also accept it because I'm trans and it would be a sterilization? Wouldn't they not want people like us to reproduce?
Totally.
Like,
but
you know, that's just like the dark sense of me.
Did you have any fear though, like that?
About going there?
Yeah.
And also,
because
I did think about that. I don't know if we touched on it in the first episode or not, but I was going to, if it was accepted, I was going to ask my surgeon if the team of nurses were like, people that she specifically knew, because I was very comfortable with my surgeon.
Okay.
She had gone out of her way to do further research upon finding out that I was trans about what all should, what would be different than for a cis woman. So I was very comfortable with her, and I was going to ask her if they were her nurses, if she knew them on a personal basis, or if they were just provided by the hospital, or these, you know, is there going to be a nun there? You know,
well,
I wouldn't have been comfortable with that. Yeah, exactly.
You're cut under, so you have no idea what
you have
doing.
Idea what's going on.
And, like, you know, of course we hope and like, want to believe that we can trust these people. Like, that's the ultimate hope, but, like, also when you're already in this place of, like, religion and all this stuff, you know, it takes one nurse who feels like you're not... you don't deserve to be okay or something to you know, put something in that you shouldn't have. Or,
exactly.
You know, like, and that's really evil sounding, but it's also not unheard of.
It happens,
it's
happens.
Not
it's
unheard
absolutely.
Of.
Yeah, and these are very real fears that we have to go through. And I think also, like, a lot of trans people have a complicated relationship with religion, as it is. So it being in a religious institute as well, and also dealing with that would be another layer to also process. So, I mean, that's an episode for a different time. But there's definitely going to be a lot of different things through going through OSF.
Okay.
But what's funny is I think Methodist is also, you know, they're called Methodist. So I think that they're religiously affiliated in some regard, but they weren't Catholic.
Okay.
So I ended up going, so I kind of dealt with that in the way where I was like, I didn't want to give you guys my money anyway, which is kind of how I dealt with it.
Right.
And also a relief that I wouldn't have to also go further into making sure that these people were trustworthy. So I went to Methodist, and I didn't have any more pre-ops at my doctor's after that.
Pre-op was what? Blood work, and did you have
I did
pap
blood
smear?
Work, EKG. No, because I had a pap earlier that year.
Right.
But we did do an ultrasound.
Okay.
And then we did it there at my surgeon's office, and it was abdominal.
Do you know what the point of the ultrasound was?
To measure, so that they could kind of figure out how much they were looking at. If I mean, she still warned going into surgery it could change, but my plan from the start was laparoscopic. So she wanted to be able to take measurements of how big, like, the ovaries and the cervix was, to kind of plan for where to place incisions also how much was going to be taken out.
They didn't do that for me, so that's why I was curious.
Okay.
Like, what would, you know, what's, why do they choose to do that?
Yeah, and she was, my surgeon was also really awesome and did abdominal.
Okay.
So did not do any sort of, like, invasive, and even said we can get by with an abdominal
for
my body type and everything else. She was comfortable with that.
Okay.
So that was really cool. And then that was it for pre-op.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what next?
So I talked to my dad and my stepmom. And
how was that?
It was good.
Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of like a, this is booked, this is going to happen.
And if people have listened to our other episodes where you've talked about you coming out and stuff, like, you never really came out. Like, your parents, your dad and your stepmom know, but you never really had a sit-down combo.
No. Never had, anything. Exactly.
So, in some way, you telling them you're having a hysterectomy is not only, like, the first time you're actually having a somewhat of a conversation that is directly related to you being trans.
Yes.
Or transitioning, but also you're telling them that you're doing this pretty intense surgery. Yeah. And like, I kind of, like, envy that about you, that you're just like, this is what I have to do, and, like, it doesn't really matter. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what your feeling is. For me, as an outsider, it seems like, you know, you're just like, this is just what I have to do, and this is my life, and I'm just gonna do it. Thank you. And, like, you know, hopefully you'll support me, and
I think
kind of thing.
Yeah, I will definitely say it's maybe not the recommended path for everyone to go.
Totally.
I think a lot of people do need that family support right off from the beginning. But yeah, it.
But this,
like I stated before, yeah, I needed to do it on my own, not have any outside influences.
Yeah.
So
it's just that
I
same
wrote them,
reminder that we can't all do this the same way.
And so I had came out to them earlier in the year and wrote them letters. And so that went fine. It was really good. But then I even did toy with the idea of going through the surgery alone. But I'm also, so for my top surgery, I was partnered at the time. I had a partner that I had been with for a couple of years, and I knew I would have her through recovery, and thinking about going through a recovery like this was kind of daunting, like, alone. So selfishly, I wanted to tell them as well.
I think it's selfish. I think, like, you made the right decision. You should not have done this alone.
Exactly. Yeah. And looking back, absolutely, I should not have. And it was really awesome to have them there with me for it. There were some awkward moments, definitely, for sure, and we'll get into those.
Well, I think even if your parents do know all of the details of your transition, it's still awkward.
It's still awkward.
My parents did every part of my transition, and it was incredibly awkward to have them there for my family.
Exactly.
It's just
weird.
And wait, I say that it's awkward, it wasn't awkward having them. I was very, very grateful to have them. It was awkward in the sense of we're sitting around preparing for a genital surgery.
Yes.
For a surgery that's going to, like, literally change my body. And that, to me, felt really uncomfortable to kind of navigate, like, nobody else in the entire world will have to go through this except for a trans person who's choosing this type of surgery.
Yeah.
No one is ever going to be able to say, like, that they had to have their parents there for a surgery involving their most private area as an adult.
Exactly.
So that's the part that's, I think, tough. But yeah.
And I think when we do say awkward, we also are incredibly grateful.
Yes.
That our parents are there.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want
so,
to be a negative.
But that doesn't mean that it takes away from.
We can have conflicting emotions.
Exactly. Conflicting emotions.
Grateful
humans,
and
grateful
uncomfortable.
And it's just like, you know, embarrassing. Kind
yes,
of,
it is
a
embarrassing.
Little bit.
It is. It's, and I guess humbling in a way, but I don't know.
You kind of take away lessons,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So your parents came.
So they actually drove up the day before and stayed with me.
Okay.
And then took me to the hospital that morning. And then we got checked in and everything. It was super early, and I'm not a morning person, so we just, like, didn't talk that morning. And then I met with a couple people beforehand, and then I was going to end to meet with an anesthesiologist, and I wanted them both back there just to have an extra set of ears and everything.
Okay.
So they came back with me, and it went well. It was so awkward in some points because... So the anesthesiologist was very, very kind, very professional, did use male pronouns the whole time, which is
better than
better than definitely for sure. But it was also awkward in the fact that, like, I haven't changed my pronouns, so this is, like, really the first time that my dad and my stepmom are sitting through, like, a 30-40 minute conversation.
So
it's the first time you know that they're immersed in this kind of language.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, kind of, like, looking at them, looking at him. I mean, it was fine, and he did make a point to use the term people with typical female anatomy.
Oh, okay.
Or something around, people with typical female anatomy while explaining how the process would go. Because he was also explaining how the anesthesia was different.
Okay.
For, you know, people with female anatomy and people with male anatomy. And how that would affect, like, the bloating and everything else and the uncomfortableness. So that was really cool.
And I like that wording choice.
Yes.
Yeah.
The wording choice was
because
really
he's
good.
Not wrong.
No.
And
I mean,
like,
that's what it is. It's
they,
anatomy. I mean, I don't, but until we have come up with a better term, I think that's the best term that we have.
And you have to, you know, in these medical situations, like, I know that it's so difficult to, like, hear those words and stuff, but, like, also, like, I kept having to remind myself through my own things is, like, they have to use the right medical terms to some extent because there's too much room for misunderstanding. There's too much room for us not following what's happening and maybe consenting to something that we're not comfortable.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Like, I mean, there just are biological differences.
Right, right. So
you
we
know,
have to know, yeah.
Yeah, that that they do need to know to do their job.
Right.
I mean, it sucks, but yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I never felt like it was, you know, you're in other medical situations where it feels like an outing or invasive in that way. And the way that he handled himself was very professional.
Okay.
So I never felt like it was, like, demeaning in any way or, like, I felt like a sideshow or anything like that. So he was really cool. And then I met a nurse beforehand who, like, rolled me back.
Okay.
And that's always just a weird experience to be, like, laying on a table. And then I do remember getting into that tiny, tiny table, and I did not think that I was going to fit.
Oh, the one that you have to, like, roll onto?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just this tiny metal slab, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going on this thing.
So for anybody who hasn't had surgery or maybe, like, I don't know, this isn't hysterectomy exclusive, but for anybody who hasn't had a surgery that's involved this, for the hysterectomy, and I also had to do it for fallow, they roll you into the OR on, you know, a hospital bed, a very traditional hospital bed. And then from in there, they ask you to, like, scoot your body over to this very small, thin, what looks like you like a metal table almost with just, like, a blanket and like it's very sterile basically, and then you have to, like, put yourself on top of it, And that's what you basically have the surgery in, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they do when you go to sleep.
Yeah, right. We really don't know what happens after that.
We could be moved.
Well, you know what? I do remember, actually, this just came to mind. There was like a heated, there was something that, so it wasn't just metal. I did lay on something, so because I do remember being like, oh, it's not freezing.
Okay.
I remember having that, yeah.
There's a heated.
Is there something underneath?
Right.
Yeah, and then so then I'm laying back, and then I see my surgeon face, and then kind of like all my anxiety kind of. Yeah.
Cool.
Because I think there's a natural level of anxiety anyway whenever you go into surgery. But like I trusted her a lot. We had a really good rapport and everything. So I was, after that, I was good to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was out. And then I don't remember much after that.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, so coming out of surgery, they put you into like a recovery room to kind of like let you wake up a little bit. And then I believe is when my stepmom and my dad came back.
Okay.
And then they let you wake up a little bit more, and then they take you into your room.
Okay. And then tell everybody about the surprise that you found when you came, when you did wake up. Your unexpected visitor that you didn't know was coming.
Yeah, so I was, Kathy made a visit.
My
and
old
stayed.
Friend.
Yeah. Yeah, Nash's old friend.
I told her she's the one you want to get rid of, you know?
Yeah, she kind of sticks around when you don't want her to.
Kathy the catheter.
Yeah, Kathy the catheter. So it was a surprise because I had discussed with my surgeon that it would either be taken out during surgery or she was going to leave it in for a couple hours.
Okay.
Post-op. What was more of a shock was when I kept asking the nurses when they were taking it out, and they said that the surgeon didn't want to take it out until the next day.
Okay.
And I wasn't okay with that. It was very uncomfortable. So when I first came out of surgery, I had very high pain, like 7, 8, definitely way more painful than top surgery.
Okay.
I would say. Way
were
more.
Were you expecting that?
A little bit.
Okay.
Just because, like, with our discussions, you had, you know, talking with you, you had warned me about just the uncomfortable nature of it, and you know your story of going through it. I was very
just
prepared.
Prepared.
Yeah,
it's
I was
different
prepared
than
for
top.
The worst. Absolutely, I was prepared for very, very high pain and what to do in that situation if that did occur.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like top surgery. I was out of the hospital in a couple hours afterwards.
Okay.
But I knew there was no way. I was like, yeah, you need to stay the night after.
Mm-hmm.
So I had asked the nurse, and then that's when she told me that it was staying in for a while. And I was upset just because I wanted it to be taken out more towards when I still had all those surgery drugs in me.
Yeah.
Like, just the pain-wise and everything else.
Because it's an experience. Like.
Yeah, definitely.
It's its own experience.
Yeah. And so I kept feeling, like, a lot of pressure. Like, I was in a lot of pain, and I kept feeling, like, a lot of pressure, and I kept saying to KJ, my stepmom, I was like, I just feel like I have to pee.
Yeah.
And I don't understand, like, it should just be, I feel like, I feel like my bladder is going to explode.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I felt. I was so uncomfortable, and the pain was so high. And then...
It's not a good feeling.
No, it's a very...
And have you ever felt that anything like that before?
No.
Okay.
Because I felt like I had to push, and I wasn't pushing anything out.
Right.
Well, I guess I have had a UTI before, and those are uncomfortable, but this was, like, times 10.
Yeah.
Like, that was, like, that's the feeling, like, you have to pee, but you don't have to pee.
Yeah,
but this was like, no, I know I need, and I'm pushing, and I can't get anything out.
I felt very claustrophobic.
Yeah. It was just a very...
It made me feel trapped.
Yeah, I felt very foreign in my body.
Yeah.
Like, not being able to do, you know, that basic function that a lot of us take for granted was very, like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, eye-opening in a lot of different ways as well.
Yeah.
Totally. So, I kept telling KJ, and then, you know, just a lot of pressure kept building up. And so they brought the nurse in. And that's when, and I was like, so when's my surgeon coming to like take, and then they called the surgeon. That's when I found out it wouldn't be taken out till the morning. And I was upset, but okay with it if that's the route that she wanted to go.
Okay.
But they did also make a point to tell me that my surgeon said that it was up to me.
Okay.
She could go either way, that she would like to leave it in until the morning, but if it was too uncomfortable for me, she was okay with me authorizing to have it taken out.
And
I mean, what are they going to do, say no?
Well.
I mean, they can try.
Who knows? Who knows? Did they offer you anything for the discomfort with it? Because
no.
Okay.
So what she did is she did something with the bag, and then it drained.
Okay, so yeah, so you had a kink.
So
it
was
into...
kind of kink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what had happened with the kink is So I'm going to backtrack a little bit.
Okay.
So when I felt like I was having a lot of pressure, they, like, relieved it. When I felt like I was having a lot of pressure, that's when I had text you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you told me to ask for a...
oxybutynin?
Yes, the mm-hmm. bladder relaxer.
Bladder, yeah.
Because I was just talking to KJ about it at this point, and I hadn't really brought it up to the nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when they came in the next round for, like, to check on me,
mm-hmm.
I brought up feeling like I needed a push, and I would have liked that. So what she did was that she took a look at the catheter and found that it was kinked.
Mm-hmm.
And so she went... So what happens is when she went to drain it, I could feel it, the
like
urine.
You were actually...
This
like
may
peeing.
Be TMI, but
no.
I could feel it go back inside of me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just a very... I did not like that.
Yeah.
It did not feel good. It made me...
Feeling,
yes,
right?
It made me want to vomit.
Yeah.
Like, I did not like anything about that experience. And so I was like, okay... It's been unkinked. I've went through that once in my life. That's all we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So then a couple hours later, when they're coming back in to check, I had the same feeling. I was like, this isn't working. Like, it's kinking. They couldn't, and I get that because it has to be put over your leg. So there does have to be some sort of
mm-hmm.
pressure that's pushing it out. And I was like, I can't do this. So then they went and she tried to drain it for the second time a couple hours. And then it went back in and I said, no. Like, that's exactly how I said it, too. I was very turned up, and I was like, nope, and that's exactly what I said. I said, nope, I'm done. I want this taken out.
Yeah.
And she said,
take it out?
Yeah, and she said, okay. She's like, we'll finish draining this, and she's like, I'll get some other nurses, and we'll just note it. We'll let your surgeon know that you want to have it taken out.
Yeah.
So they came back, and they took it out, and...
And how? And let me ask you a question. How many nurses did it take to take your catheter out?
It was two.
I had six. Remember me telling you how they made me feel like an experiment?
Mm-hmm.
You had two.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need more than two.
No, and that was something else that I noted. Like, these nurses were... I don't think I could have had a better staff.
Great.
That's really good to hear. Yes. They're very kind. They all use he, him pronouns, which
mm-hmm.
I'm fine with. Again, completely fine with.
Yeah.
They never misgendered me once.
Great.
This is kind of off topic, but I did have one nurse that... kind of asked about, like, other surgeries.
Okay.
Which was fine. Did it in a very respectful manner.
Okay.
And then did say, and I never know how to take this, but I took it as, like, a very heartwarming
mm-hmm.
moment, just
mm-hmm.
of how she said it. She said, like, oh, I just want to let you know, like, very honored to be a part of, like, your journey. So that's very heartwarming. And then...
That's so nice.
Yeah, it was very
nice. I know
nice.
A lot of people don't like things like that, but I do find that also
great. Especially in that moment.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very
because
nice.
People want to say something nice, and they don't necessarily know what that's
mm-hmm.
what that is, so they try, like, I feel like she tried to put the best words she could.
Exactly.
Like, that's really sweet.
Yeah, and I did feel very, like, taken care of with the nursing staff, for
cool.
sure. So, yeah, I only had two, and funny enough that you mentioned that, because I had asked them, I said, about the... process, and I said, so it's not normal to have
six.
And no, and she looked up at me and she said, well, no, not six, to have it pop.
Oh, to have it pop, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you asked her about my popping. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so she looked up at me and she's like, I'm sorry, what? And I said, my really good friend had this a couple years
mm-hmm.
ago, and, like, I explained the situation, and they said, no.
Yeah.
That's absolutely not normal.
Yeah.
Like, and they were just like, they were just shocked, and I was like, okay, like, there's more validation for you.
No, that does feel very validating. And so for anybody, real quick, anybody who hasn't heard my histo episode,
mm-hmm.
in my histo episode, I share the complication I had, which there was a few, but one of the main ones was my surgeon popped the catheter inside me and left the piece of the catheter in my urethra for several months.
Mm-hmm.
And
told you it was normal.
And told me
for
it was
what
normal.
You were going through.
Right. So I do find it to be very important to share that I had surgery in Seattle, and I had surgery at Swedish Hospital with Dr. Oman from the polyclinic. Everybody else at the polyclinic has been amazing, and I've had nothing but 100,000% amazing experiences, but she really fell short for me. So I try to share that whenever I can, not in a way of hurting her, but she
be
hurt
aware.
Us. She hurt us.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And didn't care to do anything differently,
mm-hmm.
or didn't care to fix the situation when she was given several opportunities to do so. So if you're having surgery in Seattle, please be very aware of who you pick. Be ask people for recommendations. That's something I didn't do because I didn't have any friends at the time
mm-hmm.
that had histos. So, you know, I was going in blindly, but anyway.
Well, and I think that's the main reason why we also do this.
Yes.
Is spreading intercommunal
mm-hmm.
knowledge, because you can't get on Yelp
mm-mm.
and look up reviews for this
nope.
kind of stuff.
Nope.
You know?
Nope.
Like,
and I would have never expected that you, in the middle of freaking Illinois,
mm-hmm.
was going to find a hospital that treated you with more respect and with more care than I received in the middle of Seattle, in literally Capitol Hill, Seattle, someplace that, like, you know, is so trans and queer and LGBT inclusive and all that,
yes,
for them to be the ones that fall short.
Yeah.
So that's why I think this is important, like, that you're, that we're getting to hear how great
it
your
is.
Experience
yeah,
was. Cause
I was
pain
in,
aside, but
yeah,
how
I was
great
in Central Illinois, so shout out to Dr. Cameron. anyone in Central Illinois looking for a histo, Dr. Cameron was
yeah.
amazing. Like I have stated before, she went out of her way and called people that she went to school with that worked in the East Coast and West Coast
wow.
who have worked with trans people.
Wow.
To find out, because I had asked her about going off testosterone beforehand, and she said, no, that's not necessary.
Okay.
She called them and found out, yeah,
yeah,
it actually
is
necessary because it increases bleeding.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure,
sure
is the risk.
Yes.
So
I believe
that like, so she amended
yeah.
that
yeah.
for me.
Right.
So,
and
that was awesome.
That's great.
But
and we don't get that experience a lot.
No, because a lot of times we're educating
mm-hmm.
our doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so for her to actually go out and educate herself.
Yep.
Further,
yep.
So I actually did leave a review on
good.
Good. For her, so you
good.
Can't actually find a trans-friendly review.
Right, but if we Google to look Central Illinois trans-friendly doctor,
you
that
gonna
probably
find
wouldn't
it.
Come up.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
Absolutely not. So Kathy got taken out.
Okay.
And
did you feel immediate relief from that, at
immediate.
Least?
Immediate.
Yeah.
Immediate.
Isn't
the
that
pressure
amazing?
Was gone.
Isn't that amazing?
Like, in it. I will say, for me personally, having it taken out really wasn't too bad.
Okay.
Because that's what prompted the conversation, is they took it out and I said, oh, that wasn't bad.
Yeah.
I was just prepared for the
mm-hmm,
worst.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, it felt weird.
It's weird,
but
yeah.
it did not feel any more weird than feeling my own urine going back inside.
Totally,
me.
Totally. Weird but manageable, right?
Yes, weird absolutely.
Manageable. But yeah, that urine thing, I know exactly what you're describing, and it's literally the grossest and weirdest feeling.
Mm-hmm.
To a point where, yeah, you want to throw up. You want
to,
like...
I didn't know what to do. Yeah, I didn't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
I wanted to jump out of the bed.
Yeah, because your body just feels like this is not anything I've ever felt before, and it feels like I should not ever feel this.
No,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not at all.
So you got the catheter out.
Yeah, got the
Did
catheter
you go
out.
Home that day? Did you stay over?
No, I stayed the night.
You stayed the night?
Yeah, so my dad and stepmom stayed for a while.
Okay.
Stayed pretty late until I was like, I'm just gonna sleep. So they went back to my place and stayed. And then they came first thing in the morning.
Okay.
And my nurses overnight were really good.
Okay.
I had some trouble sleeping. But other
to
than that,
exactly.
Yeah, I think so.
Your body's weird.
Yeah,
now.
It's weird chemicals and all
just
that kind
surgery.
Of stuff. Yeah, exactly. You know, and then they came in the morning. Oh, but this is something weird that happened, because I wasn't sure beforehand if, once I wrote my letter,
yeah.
I can't remember if I mentioned top surgery in it or not.
Ah, that you had surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we haven't been in a situation where, like, we had gone swimming
right,
yet that
be.
Summer. Yeah, out at the lake or anything like that, so I hadn't been in one of those situations, so I was like, oh, I don't really know if they know about this. So I thought it was one of my nurses. I was, in the bathroom and there was a knock on the bathroom door and I said, oh, I'll be out in a minute.
Yeah.
And I just had my gown wrapped around my waist, cause after they had left, I just had it just over my waist.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walked out and it was my dad and my stepmom sitting by the bed. I was like, oh, hi.
And did you just cover up or?
I just got into the bed and then pulled the blanket over me.
Okay. So you
but
didn't
it
make
wasn't,
any crazy
it wasn't
efforts
even.
To cover.
Because I didn't even realize until I had gotten into bed.
Gotcha.
There was
gotcha.
Such, like, a slow
of course.
In the processing.
Yeah.
So then I got into bed and I was like, oh, shit. I actually don't know. I was like, well,
now
I guess
know.
Now they know.
Yeah.
But also, during some of my preoperative questions, or even actually post-op, when they go over your medical history, when the nurses are changing out shifts,
yeah.
they say, you know, he's had a double mastectomy, double mastectomy, blah, 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 blah. So they had heard that.
Oh, okay.
So I'm pretty sure they had picked up on hearing that, but
okay.
I don't know. I mean, obviously they hadn't seen
right.
my chest or anything
hearing,
like that.
Yeah, thing, but seeing, you know.
Yeah, so that was definitely different. Crap, there's something. Oh, I wanted to talk about spotting.
Okay.
As well, about the actual healing process. So typically afterwards, you can expect to bleed a little
mm-hmm.
bit. I had a little bit of blood in my urine the first time after taking out the catheter,
mm-hmm.
and then that was it.
Okay.
So I was very lucky. I didn't have any more when I stayed in the hospital, and I didn't have any more, like, when I went home.
Okay,
awesome. I kind of thought going home, like, moving around a little
mm-hmm.
bit more would maybe cause some, so I was very lucky. I did not have in Ace Bounty. But it is typical. I was prepared for it. You know, I did go out and buy pads and stuff like that to be prepared for it.
And how was the pain once you got home? How was the cramping? Were you just resting and it was mostly fine?
Yeah, I did a lot of resting.
Okay.
I set up a pretty sweet video game den that I just, like, let myself fall into for quite a few days.
Yeah.
Pooping was uncomfortable.
Okay.
And I got Miralax.
Were you constipated from the narcotics?
A little bit.
Okay.
And I just didn't have anything in my system to really process.
For sure.
Either.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did stay on, and I stayed on the pain pills through day 5, I think.
Okay.
And I think I had them for a week. I think I was given a week prescription. Day 2 out, or like the second day, like the first day out of the hospital, day 2 or whatever, kind of a blur. But day 3 was definitely the worst pain-wise.
Okay.
That was kind of like getting through all of like the being bloated enough, the most uncomfortable. I couldn't get comfortable at all that day. The pain was really high. Yeah. And I think most people warned me that day 3 was going to be the worst. My stepmom actually had a hysterectomy years beforehand and did warn me, and we talked about it. So it was kind of cool. We got to connect on, you know, a different kind of level where we're talking about, you know, she's warning me, you know, bloated and do this and that, and you know, and she did say day 3 was the worst for me, so just be prepared for that.
That is cool.
And it was.
that's a cool experience to have, though.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was kind of good. I moved around slow for the next couple of days, but I wasn't in a lot of pain. And then I just kind of switched to ibuprofen for a couple of days after that. So pain management, it was pretty okay.
And then when did you go back to work? When did you go back to work, and when did you feel like you were normal again? You were yourself.
Okay. So it was also kind of weird because I was phasing myself out of this job.
Okay.
So I wasn't looking to get rushed back in because I knew I was moving out here.
Okay.
I hadn't quit at my job, but I wanted more time off.
Okay. So maybe when you felt like back to work?
I think I could have comfortably gone back to work probably about when I did.
Which
at the 2 week
2 weeks
mark.
Okay.
Yeah, at the 2 week mark. But what I made sure that she did was she wrote me a hour restriction.
Okay. For work.
Yes. So I can say now I was a 911 dispatcher and we worked a lot of hours.
Mm-hmm.
So if I didn't have her write that hour restriction, they could have legally worked me 80 hours a week.
Sure.
And put me on call and all those other things that you just don't want to do whenever you come back from surgery.
Yeah.
So I had her write me a 40-hour work restriction.
Okay.
I made a mistake and did not have her write that as in a 5-2 split.
Okay.
Like 5 days on, 2 days off.
Okay.
Type of thing. Because they ended up fucking with my work schedule and worked me, I think, 9 days in a row.
Okay.
So it's technically only 40 hours a week.
Right,
But they wrap me 9 days in a row.
Okay.
So whatever. Shit happens.
And then when did you start to feel normal again? Like back to yourself. You're normal.
Not for a while.
Month? 2 months?
Yeah. Probably a month and a half.
Yeah.
2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Yeah, so probably August, so about 2 months, I would say. And then I was cleared. So she called a couple days later, and we just had like a phone conversation, talk about like any potential spotting or anything like that. And then I went back into, I'm trying to think if I went once or just if I went twice.
Okay.
Because I feel like I went, maybe it was just the phone conversation, and then I went once for the actual physical exam.
Okay.
And I believe that was 6 weeks post-op.
Okay.
So it was either 6 or 8 weeks post-op. I went back, and she did a physical exam where she goes and makes sure that the stitch line is healing correct.
Gotcha.
Because I had a complete and total hysterectomy, so that means that they take out the cervix, the uterus, and both ovaries.
Okay.
So she checked to make sure the stitch line was healing fine, it was all healed, and then after that is when you get released for activities,
okay,
as I like to
call
them.
The fun stuff.
The fun stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
Which we'll talk about in another
episode. Yeah, we'll dive into that in a different episode. So that was pretty much
the process. Your experience?
Yeah.
Cool.
And then she...
Do you have, like, any big tip that you would want other people to know that you don't feel like they might know from somewhere else or something that you learned?
I just always think advocate for yourself.
Okay.
Like, I'm very glad that I had you to reach out to and that you told me to ask for the, you know, and that all was a domino effect to me advocating and saying, no, I need this catheter out, I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I think definitely.
Totally. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm really glad that was helpful. Because I know, like, I didn't know oxybutynin was a thing you can take that
helped. I had no idea that something could help.
Had your thing not been kinked, that would have fixed your pain.
Because as soon as I asked for that bladder relaxer, she looked at my catheter.
Yeah.
Because I mentioned beforehand, I was like, I feel like I have to push. And they never really looked at it.
Right.
But that was immediately after surgery. Right. So they're like, you're just getting used to it, whatever.
Well, because with the catheter, you kind of always feel like you have to push. Mm-hmm. You always feel that kind of discomfort. So it is one or the other. Is it kinked or are you really, you know, are you sensitive to this and you need medicine?
Yeah.
So like she did what she should have done. Like, you know. But I, unfortunately, like, I learned that 9 times out of 10, it's usually that you actually need the oxybutynin, but nobody typically tells you that part.
Exactly. I wouldn't have known to ask.
Right. And I didn't for a really, you know, it wasn't until my third fallow surgery that I knew that that was an option, you know, because I finally said to Dr. Chen, like, this catheter is so fucking painful.
Mm-hmm.
How are people living with catheters?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, if it's that painful, like, let me give you something. But it was because I didn't tell him.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was normal.
You thought it was normal. Yeah.
So that's why it's like, I'm glad that you were able to share.
Exactly. If you don't think it's relevant, just share it anyway, and maybe they can fix it.
I like to say that, like, I'd rather be annoying and sharing too much with a doctor than not sharing enough and hurting myself in that process.
Yeah.
You know? I would rather be annoying 9 times out of 10 if it's going to somehow benefit me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm glad that that helped you.
Yeah, it did. It was, I'm so glad. I'm so glad that I had you.
Stop. Teamwork.
But I think... That was it. I know it was a lot of, like, physical that we covered, and that kind of was it for me, really.
Not
for
too much emotional for you?
No, because I think I had done that beforehand.
Yeah.
Like, we've talked about before, like, I've never really wanted biological, physical children of my own.
Yeah.
So that was something that, and that's something I've processed years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So other people, so advocate for yourself and also process emotionally.
Yeah.
That was something I didn't have to do a lot of, and that's why we didn't cover it in this episode, but that's just as important.
Yeah, it is. It, especially, like, when it's something that affects you or, it, you know, and I bet you, even though you didn't want to have kids, if you didn't work on, like, if you didn't mentally deal with all that before the surgery, I think something maybe might have come up for you, you know, even a little bit.
Absolutely. Well,
and we're human.
Yeah, well, and something else that I did think about, even though I had processed that, is, like, no, this is, like, a definite, like, I will not be having kids, and so that could potentially be a deterrent for future partners in my life.
Oh, good call. I didn't know that, yeah.
Of, not that I would maybe necessarily want to date someone that's like a hard and fast line for, but that is something that will limit my,
you
know, potential.
Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's like any other couple or any other person who's dating.
Exactly.
You know, like there's people who absolutely want kids and they absolutely want, you know, the partner to carry or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's people who don't care. So, of course, it's something to consider. But like you said, the right partner for you, it's not going to
be that person. But that was something that is, no matter how much you process these things, that is something that you're like, oh, so I'm further distancing myself from the norm, maybe, or society, or, you know, I'm just further limiting myself.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
But that was, I think that's about it.
Okay. Well, yeah, it was a good all-encompassing, like, part two of your histo.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a part three.
Yeah. If there's anybody had an experience that they want to share, like, or if there's things that people listening have learned that they want to share that they think would be helpful for others, please, like, comment, let us know, reach out, whatever, however you want to get in touch with us.
Exactly. Yeah, we'd love to hear your experiences. Yeah. I think just more stories that we put out there, the better. Because obviously our histo journeys could not have been more different.
No. And if ours are so different, you know,
exactly,
there's a variety that everyone's is going to be pretty different.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of Transitional Wisdom. If you feel you'd like to share your story or if there's a topic you would like us to cover, please email us at nash@transitionalwisdom.org or visit our website, transitionalwisdom.org. And please don't forget to like, share, rate, whatever. It really helps us reach a wider audience of people who may find this helpful. And hey, thanks.
Who knew this would happen? A magic potion could save my life. who knew that these feelings had a name? I'm worthy of change, same as you are.